Namaste, noble warriors. This is Coach Steve Ilg, founder of Holistic Fitness in 1981. We are here, September 2011, on a beautiful, blustery autumn evening, at least here in Durango. And we are gathered here before the tribal campfire. I'm wearing my yoga toes, attempting to nurse my spine ever more elegantly. And it is just another distinct pleasure and honor, deep privilege to share this time with you. We only have a few of us on live tonight. However, I do know that the recordings of these are popular. So this is going out to all the other warriors out there that will eventually hear and hopefully benefit from this time. Before every HP yoga class, we begin with a traditional opening prayer. And I feel that might be appropriate for right now. And inwardly, you can repeat after me, if you'd like, each line. So the spine straight, eyes soft in her sockets. Feeling the gratitude of just being surrounded by a like-minded community of warriors, such as the brothers and sisters of sweat and stillness that gather here. Through the power and the truth of this practice, may all beings find happiness and the causations of happiness. May all beings be freed from sorrow and the causations of sorrow. May all never be separated from the sacred happiness which is sorrowless. May all live in equanimity without too much attachment or too much aversion, and live believing in the equality of all that lives. For the past 5 months, I guess, we've been doing these Kiva calls based on the Holistic Fitness Five Noble Disciplines. I spoke to Maha, we were going to go right into the Lifestyle Principles. However, then we'd be almost a year without being able to get any input directly from the main cogwheels of this amazing, preciously path known as Holistic Fitness, and that means you. So on this evening of evenings, as the winds of change blow so beautifully beside the sacred Animus River outside my office window here, what a perfect evening it will be to go over a few questions and answers, you know, from the few that are gathered around the campfire directly tonight, but also from the people that have written in their questions. And I was going to kind of open with a little kind of review of just the beautiful, succinct philosophy of Holistic Fitness. But really, as I mentioned, it's the students that make the radiant essence of Holistic Fitness be what it has been and continues to be and surely will continue to shine in the years and decades and hopefully lifetimes ahead of us. And so, though we don't attract a huge gathering because of certain, you know, forces and also my own choices here at the humble helm, everything has to be kind of aligned dharmically and in spiritual lineage, and I know I aggravate, you know, a lot of people, including Maha, on my strict, kind of tenets However, in this tradition, we think not in terms of just one lifetime or how much money we can make or can't make or, you know, could make. It's how many people we can get, how many students, how fun we can have making holistic workouts of the day and make it really popular. This is all there. We're planting seeds of germination karmically for lifetimes. So the perspective is a lot different. And the people, the students, the seekers, the pilgrims, the warriors, the caste that is eventually attracted to this path. I'm really wordless at just how amazing the quality of student is here. I mean, it's just categorically different than, I know we live in a very kind of fitness-oriented, body-oriented wave of Kali Yuga right now, but man, I tell you, I just want to just give you like a sampling of what comes across my desk in the past week of people that students that have knocked on the temple or have just kind of tossed their own stick of kindling into our tribal campfire. One of those warriors, by the initials of R.A., I know very well from Kinlane, and he wrote, and this is, you can see this in the Sangha Lounge in the introduction, "Dear Coaches Noble Sangha, I first joined in January of this year, not sure why it took so long to introduce myself. Possible notions of lesserness compared to the quality of athletes and warriors before me." Oh, man. I mean, I'm already sold. I'm a tear starts to well just reading this first sentence here. I'm 26 years old. I'm an exercise student at NAU, and meditation is part of practice most difficult for me. I met Coach several years ago while I was helping at Coach's practice cave in Kidlane, Flagstaff. Without having the fortune of being led to him at that time, I do not know where I would be now. I have fought through a severely overweight, stagnant childhood, addictions, failing out of college twice, going back to college, severe economic struggle, countless jobs, arrests even, and just about any other hardship someone could painfully bestow on themselves. Now I feebly prostrate at the temple door. Coach's way is the only way, steep and direct, to have any sort of chance of doing karmic work within this lifetime. An academic by nature, athlete by pure struggle. I now work in fitness at the YMCA in Flagstaff after leading scholarships at Premier Engineering University to learn more about this thing called yoga and seeing what I was physically, spiritually, capable of. First notion of spiritualness came when I was exiting a sweat lodge on the Cheyenne River in the Lakota Reservation of South Dakota when I was 17. After my scout group had done 2 weeks of community projects for the tribe, our elder host invited a handful of us into his private sweat lodge on the final evening of our trip. Being a scientifically grounded punk rock skateboarder, I had dismissed the notion of God by age 13, growing up in the conservative Midwest. Until that one perfect moment when Grandmother Moon let me know the real truth. The elder whispered a name to me, Wasakmani Haksla. Walk strong, boy. And so, I continue to walk the path. Love to you all, R.A. Oh, take a breath on that one. That's called quality of warrior over quantity. So, this is a question and answer forum, and I'm going to address one question now, writtenly, and then I will see if any of the gathered warriors tonight have a question that we can play with. So this question is, Coach, I saw somewhere once that there is a holistic fitness mantra specific to mealtimes. Is this something you, Coach, could post for easy access? I know exactly what is meant here, and it's not technically a mantra. Mantra is probably, it's probably in a tie with the word yoga and Zen-like. You know, it's very funny how authors and stuff, they always, you know, when they're writing their columns and stuff, you always see that Zen-like. He had a Zen-like thing. You know, why the hyphen, why the lie? And you can tell that they don't sit themselves. And it's just an interesting play. And you hear mantra all the time, too, especially in sports columns, you know. And a mantra, remember, a mantra, anciently means mind protecting. And what is the mantra protecting the mind from is basically kind of different lesser aspects of itself, primarily the ahamkara, the egoic layer, and the manas, the lower mind. So a mantra is a mind-protecting kind of linguistic mechanism designed to protect the higher mind from the vulnerabilities of deeply grooved kind of samskara tendencies and habits accumulated within the mental sphere. Now, mantra with a capital M is one that has been blessed by one's accepted lineage teacher. The teacher, or the Rinpoche, or the guru, is accomplished to a degree that he or she is almost a satguru. In other words, the teacher has to impart or transmit the mantra to the student who has already taken pilgrimage of whatever the program or the prescription is. And it is a very deeply kind of important threshold in a teacher-student relationship, which is what the science of yoga, which holistic fitness is, the science of union, it's a practice of wholeness. So that's a very important aspect. I want you all to kind of re-mind ourselves, because it's, you know, you hear that word mantra a lot. After all my decades of teaching and my work with my Tibet teachers, I'm only allowed, quote-unquote allowed, to transmit one mantra. And that's that's a very, very high and touching quality that I take very seriously. So I just wanted to clear that up. Now, what he's talking about is the blessing, the mealtime blessing prayer. And the traditional holistic fitness mealtime blessing prayer comes from the ancient yogis. It can even be found in the Bhagavad Gita verse or the phrase. It's in the section of renunciation through knowledge section when Krishna is speaking to Arjuna, of course. And it's used by millions of Hindus as, it's actually a small, it's the final part of a longer, beautiful section of the Bhagavad Gita. And in my saying it, there will be a transmission value attached to it. And then I'll explain the prayer. So this is what's said each time before we take a meal. Brahma pranam, Brahma havi, Brahma magni, Brahmana hota, Brahma itam, gatabhayam, Brahma kama, samahana. This ritual is God. This food is God. We, who are offering this food, are God. The fire of hunger is also God. All karma is God. We who know this may one day find God. Brahma pranam, Brahma havir, Brahma ni, Brahma nota, Brahma itan, gatabhayam, Brahma karma, samahana. Thumbing through my Bhagavad Gita here, looking for that looking for the extended version of that. Here it is. Thank you, Vishnu, for manifesting that. Here, Krishna is speaking to Arjuna. This is so stinking beautiful. Listen to this. Spine straight. The seers say truly that he is wise who acts without lust or scheming for the fruit of the act. His act falls from him, its chain broken, melted in the flame of my knowledge. Turning his face from the fruit, he needs nothing. The Atman is enough. He acts and is beyond action. Not hoping, not lusting, bridling body and mind, he calls nothing his own. He acts and earns no evil. What God's will gives, he takes and is contented. Pain follows pleasure. He is not troubled. Gain follows loss. He is indifferent. Of whom should he be jealous? He acts and is not bound by his action. When the bonds are broken, his illumined heart beats in Brahma. His every action is worship of Brahma. Can such acts bring evil? And here's the part of the mealtime ritual. Brahma is the ritual. Brahma is the offering. Brahma is he who offers. To the fire, that is Brahma. If a man sees Brahma in every action, he will find Brahma. So that's a different wordage, of course, but that that last part is all about the ritual of God. Brahma, of course, being God, the creator. He's the creator aspect of the Hindi's three primary deities of spirituality: Brahma, the creator; Vishnu, the sustainer; and Shiva, the destructor, the destroyer. So this ritual is God. This food is God. We are offering this food to God. The fire of hunger is also God. All karma is God. We who know this may one day find God. So, there's the answer. That is the blessing prayer. Even my precious little Devachan can recite that now in Sanskrit and English because we say it before every mealtime. And it's a powerful vehicle. I really, really feel in my heart that if people could just understand the Dharma of taking a moment of gratitude, of silence, before eating, it would be really hard to get obese or even overweight. It really would. If you can just feel the depth of the 10,000 beings associated with whatever it, think of what it takes to get, you know, even a morsel of food to our mouth. Man, I mean, that's big. I mean, it's just mind-blowing. and then to, you know, kind of numb yourself and to just kind of gorge on food and without that degree of gratitude, woof, 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 how blessed are we to have awakened at least to this particular understanding. Having said that, of course, the three, you know, the nutritional principles of holistic fitness and the sunlight of herbs and the map, and those of you that are on the ASEA, sacred water, once you get that stuff, you know, cranking in the physiology, then, I mean, food, combine that with the pranayama, the EMR, you know, and your body doesn't need a lot of calories, doesn't need a lot of food. And in fact, when you eat the physicality food, oof, the whole kind of mind-body-spirit vehicle just starts kind of, you know, kind of getting lethargic and toxic. And then, so it becomes very natural, very easy to eat with gratitude, eat light, rely on the path, the principles. Not a big, shouldn't be a big, super big deal, but man, I tell you, it's a big deal in this country, overeating. Very well then. God, you guys are so patient with me. My precious brothers and sisters, maybe you might have a sister around the campfire by now. Does anyone near the immediate campfire have a question?
I have one that no one else does.
Sure.
I'm wondering, what do you see the role of body work, meaning massage, Reiki, any sort of somatic body work, being for a holistic fitness student? Is it necessary? Is it helpful? Does it accelerate anything? And if so, how often is good? How often is too much? If you could just...
Beautiful question. Oh, so, well, let me put it this way. I certainly would not have been able to, you know, even I'll use the term self-healed from, you know, my paralyzed spine and smashed pelvis. It's not really self. I didn't do it. And healed shouldn't be used in the past tense because I, like everyone else, am in a process of healing. We all are. Now, body work is grouped under the yoga category in holistic fitness because it increases your degree of kinesthesia. So when you're receiving body work, you are improving your communication with your interior body. Important to note, body work is, you know, there's kind of two big, we can either kind of go into the structural kind of body work, such as the type of body work, you know, I do is compressive tissue manipulation, where we're not so much concerned with addressing and soothing and pacifying the muscles, but rather addressing the connective tissue fabric in anticipation of bringing the body to a more whole alignment, where the structure, you know, starts orientating or reorientating itself to a more conducive, natural, free-flowing mechanics, then the physiology breathes, expands, the pliability, the elasticity of all the cellular components comes online. So the, you know, the structural body worker sees and kind of manipulates the body far different than a massage, you know, just kind of soothing the muscles, which is good. I mean, it's, you know, you can help, you know, flush some of the fatigue toxins out after a race through, you know, sports massage and things like that. But really, you know, and then you have to consider also in your question the, you know, the non-invasive, not even almost tactical, you know, the Reiki, the more gentle cranial sacral, you know, kind of manipulations going on. I personally feel that I wouldn't say it's vital if there's an injury history, you know, prevalent, seeking a style of bodywork and a trust relationship with a good bodyworker, good meaning appropriate to you in your transformation, is, I think it's probably a blessing of an incarnation. I think you earned it. And should take advantage of it. You know, having said that, I don't feel it's healthy for a holistic fitness student to just kind of rely on body work as a crutch. It should amplify the personal kind of sweat that's already going on. You know, it's true. If you get a body work session by me, sometimes we can do work within an hour to an hour and, you know, half, through the floor work, through the, you know, the tissue manipulation, then, you know, 25 yoga classes. You know, it can just really kind of add a, you know, a spark amplification to the work. Is it vital? I don't. Tough question. I would rely on your intuitive wisdom. You know, and, you know, it's depending on the bank account stuff. Boy, yikes. There's a lot of money being wasted on, you know, different healing modalities that really, it has to, I guess what I'm saying is the body work has to leave an imprint, a kinesthetic blueprint, if you will, of, yeah. You know, I can feel that, I can work with that in my yoga, I can, now I know how to kind of relax that particular articulation. If you can get that type of, you know, feedback from a session, then that's a lot different than, you know, just going and kind of passively laying and expecting to be healed externally. You know how we are in this path. We don't want to miss the karma, man. We want to be able to do the healing by ourselves, and a appropriate body worker will always, you know, it's like a guru, it's a shiner, a slayer of darkness. They'll be able to turn that light on in that kind of bleak, wounded, dark place. And then you can take it and run with it. So, did that help?
Yeah, that's a great answer. Thank you.
Do we have another live question before I go to another online question?
Yes, Coach. I have a question.
Speak, warrior. Who is this?
This is Blair Lyon from
Pittsburgh. Oh, Conway, you precious one. How can I serve you tonight?
I have two questions, and maybe some more will bubble up from the heart. Both of these questions tend to be somewhat technical in nature. Number one would be in regards to overhead dumbbell press, three-stage technique. The question being, do the other students find that as incredibly difficult as I do? That's got to be the hardest, you know, strength training technique of all, three-stage.
Well, let's pause there. Can we pause there and address that?
Sure.
So, and one of the reasons why I giggled, besides the years of never being able to lift more than, I think, 25 pounds in that particular movement, maybe. I think that was like my career highlight. Wednesday in Prop here in Durango, I had us in this crazy kind of, you know, like a foundation, Iemowa Foundation kind of low horse riding stance, and we're superimposing these, you know, this basically this movement plus others, the overhead dumbbell press, three-stage technique. And, you know, it is. It's just astonishing how difficult that is. And you might know, you know, more about it than I. I mean, we know that the overhead dumbbell press, of course, works the entire, I mean, deltoid pretty well. I mean, it's, you know, it's pretty comprehensive on all three heads of the deltoid. However, as you know also, I mean, that shoulder joint in particular is just, I mean, it's only there because of tendons and ligaments. It's a very kind of vulnerable shoulder. It's a very vulnerable articulation. And I feel like that movement in particular, because the humerus is externally rotated as such, we're not in that, you know, we don't find ourselves with the upper arm bone in that particular position a lot in daily life. And I just feel like neurally, the communication kind of experiences a pretty quick meltdown. It's not used to, you know, a good neural feed in 60 seconds, you know, in a long time to be, you know, superimposing some resistance work onto that, you know, that connected tissue specific joint. I really feel like if there was more muscles involved, you know, we'd have a better chance of the oxygen, the blood, and the nutrients to get in there and, you know, kind of make a difference. But I feel because it is so CT specific, you know, neurally it just gets kind of fried quick. And, you know, that's why years can go by and people that are used to seeing black and white progress and every workout or every month I want to make sure my overhead presses go up and weight. Well, in this work, yeah, this is more of a pilgrimage. It's a process. And that particular movement really just kind of keeps the shoulder, you know, ahead very, you know, the overall tonality, the holistic health of that network, you know, that's kind of the key ingredient of that particular movement. Given anything what I said, does that, I don't know if it helps, but maybe it you know, it kind of, I just want you to feel validated in the sense that, yeah, that thing, it's just, you know, we were doing improv, like I said, you know, the other night, and I've been doing this thing for a long time, and those prop blocks are only 2.2 ounces, and we were just getting worked, you know. So, you know, if you're using any amount of weight on that, that's great fortune. Any other input, observations?
I always feel that psychologically, it has a great impact doing it. Because you're using such light weights by necessity usually, and other people don't quite understand what's going on internally, it forces you to just stay with what you're doing and not to let your ego go out to, you know, the glances from the big guys around the gym, you know, watching me with this little 5-pound dumbbell, and yet if they were to try the same thing for 60 seconds, it would be pretty challenging.
Nice. So Blair, where do you feel, you know, because I don't know if you guys know, but Blair is a very prominent kind of physical therapist, and so where, you know, because when I designed it, when I designed that technique, I knew by direct experience that if I worked the top half first, I neurally kind of pre-fatigue the shoulder at least its biomechanical advantage. And then when we do those little kind of higher speed ones down low, I think that's where the biochemical fatigue just, you know, kind of, you know, just really polishes it off. And then we rely the full range, you know, the final 20 seconds on the full range, because at least we get the assistive musculature, you know, from the other, you know, regions to kind of help us. Where do you feel, you know, physiologically?
First off, I'm humbled by your kindness as weight limit. I'm sort of prominent physical therapist. I'm a very, very humble physical therapist. But I find, as far as working with the people that I work with, I do utilize staccato in three stage with a lot of different movements, because it just really helps people who are not used to moving refine their movement, get comfortable with a full range of motion.
Instead of forcing them into a full range of motion right off the bat.
Instead of just cranking out repetitions for the sake of cranking out repetitions. Because, you know, you get desensitized to that. So I think it's really a good kinesthetic education to, you know, hold in staccato and then move, or to work through, you know, the different parts of the range in three stage.
Yeah, well, boy, I agree. If I, you know, because I've, you know, I, you know, especially when there's a quote-unquote uncoordinated or, you know, someone that doesn't live in their kinesthetic body too often, wow, the worst thing you could possibly do is to expect them to do, a big range of motion movements and not let the, you know, weaker, you know, movement patterns and the weaker structures not be, you know, prolapsed, compromised, and, you know, they just basically muscle it up with as best, you know, kinesthetic sense that they have. And as you've noticed, these little, you know, the staccato techniques and, you know, three stage, they really kind of help fill in the gap, if you will, toward a more holistic, I love that phrase you used, kinesthetic education.
I would most definitely agree with that.
Yes. And the second, did you have a, you had a second offer?
I am honored to be able to ask another question. In the Kinlani flow sequence and in the rock vinyasa, there is a posture in which it's an iliotibial band stretch.
Oh,
the downside leg. Now, my question on that is, do you want us to be bearing weight on the greater trochanter? Do you want us up there? Or should we be behind there?
Yeah. You can bear you. That's a great question and very insightful. And what the answer is, and it's not, you know, it's not a black and white answer. You dance. You dance in between. I want you to kind of let the greater trochanter bear the weight, and then as she's bearing some weight, listen very deeply, even perhaps in a kumbhaka, especially a with the breath externally held outside. Then, with the greater trochanter bearing the weight, I bet you anything you'll be able to kind of feel some of the hip restraining, connective tissue start to yawn just a little, just a slight bit. Upon feeling that kind of yawning, that little opening by way of the, the weight-bearing movement, and then kind of ease back off the weight-bearing and play the breath within that. And you can almost dance back and forth, each kind of you know, weight-bearing, non-weight-bearing movement, taking several, you know, seconds with deep ujjayi breathing. And man, if you just play that dance, that line, you can get some really, really dramatic openings. Dramatic being, you know, please understand, you know, dramatic being the understanding that, you know, the IT band, the hip restraining movements, pelvic, you know, all that stuff. I mean, those are just short, thick, strong. You know how, oh, man, that's deep territory. But if you can play that dance between those two, you'll feel a shift occur, but it does require a lot of inner listening, and that's why I treasure your question so much, because it, you know, it shows me that someone's, you know, doing their homework. And those two practices, especially rock vinyasa, wow. I mean, we don't waste like a lot of my work, it's not, or the work that comes through me, we don't waste any time. And every one of those movements are just, there's a universe within, you know, every breath, within those. So my counsel is to dance. Danny, does that help?
It's very helpful. It took about a year of doing that movement very consistently, almost daily, to get to the point where I could, you know, get onto my greater trochanter and really feel it. So it's only happened just recently. So I've been, you know, exploring it.
Well, congratulations. Another thing that came through me while feeling you respond to that is Uddiyana Bandha. Do you remember Uddiyana Bandha?
Yes.
That will help a lot, because that abdominal pelvic cavity needs upliftment. I mean, it needs, you can't just bloat out the gut and then expect, you know, the prana to feed that dance of weight-bearing and non-weight-bearing that we were speaking of earlier. So really in the weeks ahead, revisit Mula Bandha, but Uddiyana Bandha, and a good way of, maturing quickly Uddiyana Bandha is by practicing Nauli. God, don't you love how one step leads to another? Nauli, I know it's in the Sangha Lounge if you're not familiar with it. And I can probably do another, I was thinking about doing another blog post on Nauli. Anyway, so keep your radar open on the teachings, and I'll revisit that teaching. But Nauli will quickly accelerate the maturity of Uddiyana Bandha. And as we go deeper into any asana movement, that Uddiyanic uplift, really, you just got to clear the gut. You got to clear the lower chakras in order to access, you know, the deeper fields of play available within those lower centers anyway. So, just the work just keeps, you know, just keeps layering itself on. But the blessing here, though, it doesn't really take much more time. It just takes a tweaking of, you know, the available time. And when there's mindfulness in the technique, boy, a lot of shifts can happen quite quickly. Om Mani Padme Hum.
Thank you.
Thank you. Now, I promised this person I would address this on this evening's call. So I'm going to address this, and then we'll return to the live warriors if any of you have another question. So this comes from student M back east. She says, I gave away the gender, didn't I? Sorry. Coach, you got me all stoked up on the holistic fitness sacred pilgrimage bucket list. This is crazy. However, I'm going to do all three, meaning the three events, in this lifetime, or I'll die trying. My question is, which should I do first? I'm 34 years old, parenthetically in awe of and in awe of you, my elder, unquote. I run 1 to 2 times weekly for about 30 minutes. She says I suck at yoga. I do CrossFit. I live for your Facebook updates. I can't believe all the beautiful, inspired pictures and your all-access teachings. Thank you. All right, so, you're welcome. Second of all, please don't be awed at any time by yoga. I'm about the most average freaking Joe out there. I do try hard. I do try soft. And that's about the only difference. Let's see. Oh, and the next thing I wanted to pick up on is you said, which one should I do first? So let's revisit, of course, for the sake of clarity. M is referring to the 3 sacred sweat pilgrimages of holistic fitness. These are structured throughout the year to give anchor to our kind of our unique kind of twist on sweat-based dharmic pilgrimages. And the first one occurs in February to Zoodle or Mount Taylor Winter Quadrathon. And then there's one in the spring here in Durango, the Iron Horse Bicycle Classic. And then in September, there's the Imogene Pass Run. Those are the 3 sacred sweat pilgrimages of this path. It's great to accomplish all in a lifetime. Some might, like PY, trying to be crank them all off in the course of a calendar year. But the first thing I would say is you don't do these events. You take them. A pilgrimage is something that you take, you don't do. And the big difference is that a pilgrimage is a processing of self. It's a transformative process. It's a lot different than just going to a 10K race and, you know, just doing it, and nothing wrong with that, of course, but these are historically and spiritually, these are the lineage pilgrimages of this path, and you will be changed, mind, body, and spirit, by doing even one of them. Also, I would say, M, that it doesn't sound like you remember yet, so that would be a good thing. Don't rely on my Facebook updates and the all-access teachings. You can get a whole lot of education, of course, by becoming a member. That would be really, really important. Also, my answer would be one, be careful doing CrossFit, of course. CrossFit is notorious for like their workouts of the day, and great stuff, you know, novelty stuff. If you continue to chronically kind of piecemeal that type of stuff, it spells pretty much disaster for the joints and long term overall holistic health and of course fitness. It's a little bit like, it's why I don't offer yoga challenges. I know that, you know, yoga teachers try to make money. We have to try to make money, but offering a yoga challenge where students are forced to do as many yoga classes as possible in the course of a month is really very, it violates the very first principle of yoga, ahimsa, because you're doing violence on, and it's called a spike in the graph in this work. Everything needs to be slow and steady and just progressive. Can you just take your time and wait, be patient like Blair and wait for a year or two to get another little glimmering of openness, and how sacred is that? So pace yourself, M. And the answer is you should, in my counsel, you should probably go for Imogene Pass first, since you do have you are running regularly. That would be the kind of the go-to event for you. Then you'd need to kind of get your cycling together, and then do Iron Horse, and then, of course, the most technically and logistically difficult, perhaps the most demanding of all, is the Winter Quadrathlon. So good luck to you, M. All right, we have a couple minutes left. So if anyone that has gathered, shared this precious time together tonight around our tribal campfire, we're going to let the fire die out here. But if anyone has a question, please offer it as a gift. Okay, then I will go to a another question, and okay, this is kind of I get this a lot, so let's go here. It falls within our nutritional discipline. First, he asks, how do I get signed up at Sunrider? And so, of course, you go to sunrider.com, you hit join, IBO, you need my email, Steve at Holistic Fitness, my name, my sponsor ID, 00081725. And he also asks, and if you're joining Sunrider for the first time, you know, we always start, almost always, with phase one. So, you know, bare bones phase one would just be like, I don't know, like Slim Caps, Kali, and Sunnydew. That would probably be the, you know, the bare bones. Otherwise, you go Fibertone, Slim Caps, Vitadophilus, Sunbars, and Kali Night, Kali Day, or Fortune Delight. Because you want, you want to, like if your body was a car, I don't often use that analogy, it's too mechanical, but, phase one, is kind of like improving the exhaust stroke, whereas phase two feeds the compression stroke. The great thing about integrating the sun bars in a phase one is it adds a little bit of a compression stroke to the exhaust stroke. But my first job, in phase one for you is to clarify the cells, drop the fat, and start vibrating higher. Now, he also asks, why do you call them whole food herbs when they're just, they're just pills? Well, the pills are deceiving because inside the pill, if you break apart the pill, and you're welcome to, you're spilling out a bunch of herbs, and those herbs are concentrated whole foods, and they're made out of plants. So what is in those pills are oil, water, cellulose, and that's what's in plants. And thumbing through this, this is right from Dr. Dean Black, PhD, who tested all the Sunrider herbs. He explains it very well, why Sunrider foods are whole foods, even though they come in powders and pill encapsulated pills. Plants are made of three things. One, oil. Two, water. Three, cellulose. Oil and water don't mix, and neither water nor oil can dissolve cellulose. So the three elements, even though they're physically together, are chemically separate. The oil contains oil-soluble nutrients, vitamin E, for example, while the water contains water-soluble nutrients, like the B-complex vitamins. Using very sophisticated, and I might add expensive, techniques, Dr. Chen separates the oil and the water from the cellulose. He discards the cellulose and spray dries the oil and the water together. The water evaporates, but the nutrients in it do not. So they form a powder, and the oils get absorbed into the powder. The water's gone, the cellulose is gone, but all of the nutrients, both fat-soluble and water-soluble, remain. The two kinds of nutrients are no less whole in the powder than they were in the plant, but they're much more concentrated, meaning that 1 pound of powder contains a lot more nutrients than a pound of plants. So I think that's a great, that pretty much clarifies, just how powerful those whole food are from Sunrider. So our time together on this beautiful evening of evenings has reached its maturity. I cannot wait until we can meet and gather again like this, and until we can meet and gather again like this. May the dharmic drops of your ever-ongoing and ongrowing insight derived from the steady progress of doing what it takes to sit still every now and then, to sweat every day, or at least every other day. May those dharmic insights grow and blossom and ripen and help all beings in all realms. May you be fearless in your choices of word that are kind, true, and helpful, both thought words and spoken words. And most of all, may the breath be with you. And may your sacred joy vibrate ever higher within the trillions and trillions and trillions of cells that make up and wrap around like mist this soul of evolution, your Atman. Brahma Pranam, Brahma Havir, Brahma Ni, Brahma Nahuta, Brahma Edan, Gantabayam, Brahma Karma, Samahana. Precious ones, have a wonderful, wonderful evening. Thank you so much for your time next to the campfire. So I guess we will cover up the embers now, and we will see you next time on Holistic Fitness Kiva Call. Namaste, noble warriors.
Namaste.
Namaste. Namaste.